1.2, your very own client for research and writing assignments. The learning experiences in this manual have been designed to mimic the on-the-job realities of a paralegal position. To that end, each student will be assigned his or her own client. Virtually all assignments, including writing and research tasks, will be based on that client's hypothetical situation. Law offices keep important documents in client files. As soon as possible, students should purchase a classification folder and begin maintaining a client file. Keep track of hours spent working for the client, just as you will likely keep track of billable hours when working in a law firm. Each student will be provided with unique client facts, eliminating the temptation to share documents and information. Using their individual client scenarios, students will create the following. 1. An interoffice memorandum. 2. Client correspondence. 3. Initial client interview questions. 4. A summons and complaint. 5. Discovery documents. 6. A trial memorandum, notice, and brief. 7. Other possible documents at your instructor's discretion. These assignments focus on helping students develop high-end paralegal skills. Most of the following are derived from real cases involving real issues. In fact, you may in some cases struggle to find even one or two relevant cases to support your client's position. This book does not focus on teaching you to simply pass tasks. Expect to be challenged. In an actual law office environment, a paralegal would be able to contact the client as well as witnesses to learn more about the matter being represented. Therefore, students have some license to expand on the facts provided, but only to a reasonable extent. Be creative, but not too creative. Assignment 1.2, select or be assigned a client. Become familiar with the hypothetical facts of the client you have been assigned or have selected from the following list. Hypothetical clients. Client 1. Your client, Wilma Setter, went to see her doctor this past April 1 for a general checkup. She mentioned a small lump in her breast to the doctor. He said not to worry unless it became larger. 2 months later, she went to another physician who diagnosed the lump as cancerous and recommended a modified mastectomy. Her new doctor claims that if the cancer had been diagnosed when the client first mentioned it to her initial doctor, the breast might have been saved. Your client wants to sue for the emotional distress caused by the loss of chance and misdiagnosis. Client 2. Our client, Hannah Graves, informed her husband, John, 2 weeks ago that she wanted a divorce. Her husband asked her to reconsider, so she said she would think about it for 2 weeks. After the 2 weeks had expired, yesterday, our client told her husband that she had, in fact, filed for divorce that day and that she was moving out that very evening. Her husband became enraged, assaulting our client and demanding sex. She refused and begged him to stop. Despite her pleas, the husband forced himself sexually upon our client. Although the authorities refused to file charges, our client wants to sue her estranged husband for the emotional distress caused by the attack. He claims that there is no such thing as spousal rape. Your complaint will allege liability for the emotional distress, but your research and trial brief will deal with the limited issue of whether spousal rape is an actionable claim. Client 3. Your client, Clara Benton, owns a house on the side of a hill. Last month, she noticed that a smell, which could be best described as gasoline-like, seemed to be present throughout the house, especially in the basement. Upon asking around the neighborhood, she learned that the gas station, about 100 yards up the hill from her property, had suffered a ruptured pipe about 5.5 years ago. This is beyond the normal statutory time allowed to file a court action. She is now concerned that, even if she proves that the ground contamination was a direct result of the gasoline spill, she will not be able to sue. Your client wants to sue for the damages caused by the negligence of the ABC gas station in allowing the leak. Your complaint will deal with the damages caused by the gas leak, but your research and trial brief will concentrate on the limited issue of whether the statute of limitations bars the lawsuit. Client 4. Henry Green was driving alone down Pearl Street on the evening of the 10th of last month. The speed limit at the vicinity of Pearl and Evans Streets is 45 miles per hour. At that point of Pearl Street, there is a slight curve to the right as you go down a hill. As Henry negotiated this curve, he apparently hit a depression in the pavement, not quite a hole, that is almost impossible to detect without close examination. A witness at the scene, Melba Torres, claims that when Henry's car hit the defect in the road, it bounced wildly and Henry lost control. Unfortunately, Henry hit a tree 30 yards down the road, and before he could regain control of his vehicle, Henry died an hour after arriving at the hospital. Another woman, Kate Morris, came running out after hearing the crash. She stated over and over, "I told them this would happen. I told them so." When asked what she meant, Kate said she had been complaining about the very depression in the pavement to the city department responsible for road repairs. The official response, according to Kate, was, "We'll get to it when we get to it. We represent Henry's estate. You are suing the state for failure to make repairs to the road despite having received notice of the defect." Client 5. Our client, Mary Smythe, purchased a TV 2 weeks ago from Ace TV Sales. When it arrived 2 days later, a dispute arose with the delivery man, Brian Zorn, due to damage on the TV. After having words with Mr. Zorn in the living room, our client left to use the phone in her bedroom. Mr. Zorn followed and physically assaulted our client. The delivery man was arrested 2 hours later and charged with assault and battery. But you are researching the civil implications. It turns out that Mr. Zorn had 2 previous convictions for assault and battery. You are suing Ace Television, claiming they were negligent in hiring Mr. Zorn. Client 6. Our client, Susan Peterson, is suing Carl Fayette for a breach of contract. Susan bought a baseball card on eBay from Carl. The item was a Mickey Mantle rookie card signed by the Hall of Famer, which included a letter of authenticity. Susan paid $4,500 for the card. Susan was buying it for her 13-year-old son's birthday gift. When it arrived, Susan immediately noticed a problem. The card was signed, but the name was spelled incorrectly as Mickey, M-I-C-K-Y, Mantle. When Susan contacted Carl by email, he responded that Mr. Mantle must have been intoxicated when he signed it. The letter of authenticity was also of concern. Carl was the person authenticating the item, and it was notarized at a Kinko's. Susan is now suing for the purchase amount and the costs of litigation. Client 7. Our client, Mila Forrest, applied for a job at Himple's department store. She signed a consent form and release permitting the store to question her doctor regarding her physical ability to perform certain tasks. During a phone conversation, the doctor, William Snuffles, mentioned that our client could not have children. Our client was hired, but soon after she began working, she was told that one reason she was hired was that the store was happy she wouldn't be burdened with children. Our client is upset that this information has become common knowledge at work and is suing the doctor, claiming emotional distress caused by the unauthorized disclosure and breach of the doctor-patient privilege. Client 8. Our client, Michelle Schoen, is 35 years old. Last year, Michelle and her husband, Peter, took a drastic step to impregnate Michelle. After years of unsuccessfully attempting to procreate, Michelle and Peter approached a mutual friend, Robert King, to donate sperm. Robert agreed. After a rather awkward process, which will not be discussed here, Michelle was injected with Robert's sperm without having sexual intercourse. Michelle and Peter did not have sexual relations that night, but did have them the following two nights. Michelle soon announced that she was pregnant, and 9 months later gave birth to a little girl, Hannah. This should have been the end to a happy story. However, when Hannah was born, Robert showed up at the hospital telling everyone that he was the father and passing out cigars. Robert is threatening legal action to be named father of the child and to enjoy full parental rights. Your client is taking the offensive, suing to have the parental rights of Robert declared non-enforceable. Your complaint will ask for an injunction to prevent Robert from holding himself out as the father. Client 9. Our client is Ross Foster. About 3 years ago, his 17-year-old daughter, Rebecca, came down with a very high fever and infection at a 2-month summer camp. Ross was called, and he drove up the next day to pick up his daughter. When Ross arrived, however, he was told that Rebecca had been taken to the hospital the previous evening. When Ross arrived at the hospital, a 45-minute drive, he was told that Rebecca had gone into a coma the previous evening and had died that morning. The cause of death was an infection of an unknown origin. It was hard, but Ross picked up the pieces and moved on with his life as a single adult. Last week, however, Ross received a phone call from Phyllis Bosley, the mother of one of the girls at the camp Rebecca had attended. Phyllis told Ross that she and her daughter, Monica, now 20, had been talking about Rebecca's unfortunate death, and that Monica had said, "You know, one of the counselors said Rebecca's was the second case of toxic shock syndrome that year." Ross would like us to represent him. Before we begin investigating the facts of Rebecca's death, we need to find out whether the statute of limitations will prevent us from winning anything for Ross. Your client is suing, and your complaint will be based on negligence. For your research and trial brief, however, the question will be, when does the clock start ticking as to liability for an injury from toxic shock syndrome? Client 10. Your client, Fred Northrup, is employed at the Acme Insurance Company. He had worked there for about 10 years when he was transferred to the Risk Management Division. His supervisor, Helen Redmond, took a special interest in Fred. She often asked Fred to lunch and even invited him to attend several out-of-town seminars with her. Fred always refused because he was happily married to his wife, Wilma, and did not want any misunderstandings. Last July 5, at about 3 p.m., Helen called Fred into her office and proceeded to lay her cards on the table. She told Fred that he was a good worker and was currently being considered for a position as Assistant Risk Control Manager. She also made it clear that he would have a much better chance at the promotion if he would accompany her to Las Vegas for the annual Risk Management Symposium. Helen said, "Since I'm the person who will make the final recommendation, I think it would be in your best interest to come with me to Vegas." Fred refused. He explained his marital situation and told Helen that he was only interested in a business relationship. Helen said that was fine with her, but her attitude toward Fred changed. She criticized his work in front of others and referred to him as a lazy worker. For the first time since he had begun working for Acme, Fred received a poor performance review. The assistant position went to an individual who had only been working at Acme for several months and who had no experience in risk management. Your attorney wants to file suit in trial court on grounds of sexual harassment and loss of economic opportunity. Client 11. Your client, William Jackson, is being sued in civil court for negligence. This past January 4 at approximately 4 p.m., William was on his way to the shopping mall. At the intersection of Trinity Avenue and Presley Boulevard, William watched a red Acura Legend driven by George Hempel run a red light and crash into a blue Oldsmobile Cutlass Supreme driven by Paula Eureka. The Legend struck the Oldsmobile on the rear end of the passenger side. As William got out of his car and ran toward the accident, he could see the woman getting out of the blue Oldsmobile. He also observed smoke coming from the rear of the Oldsmobile and was afraid there would soon be an explosion. As he got closer, he noticed the driver of the Legend, George Hempel, lying across the front seat, moaning in agony. William made an instantaneous decision to pull the injured man from the car. His intent was to save the man from what William thought would be an imminent explosion. As it turned out, there was no fire, and the man who William saved was paralyzed from the waist down. Doctors have stated that there is no way to determine what caused the paralysis, the accident, or being pulled from the car. Mr. Hempel has sent harassing letters to William, given newspaper interviews, and appeared on the Jerry Springer television show, claiming he was paralyzed by William. William is suing Mr. Hempel for libel and slander. The eventual research question will be whether William can be held accountable for any injuries suffered by Mr. Hempel. Client 12. Lily Carr worked nights as a waitress, usually getting off at about 11 p.m. This past December 1, Lily got off work a bit late at about 11:30 p.m. As usual, she caught the bus. It usually took her about half an hour to get home since she lived at the last stop on the route. On this particular evening, the driver, Jake Ewing, struck up a conversation with Lily. At Lily's normal stop, the bus kept going. Jake drove to a rural area where he sexually assaulted Lily. Jake was convicted of rape. Now Lily is suing the Hallam Bus Company for negligently hiring Jake. She claims that the bus company should have had knowledge of the fact that Jake had a previous conviction for sexual assault. You're suing the bus company for negligence. Client 13. Derek Phelps has been charged with murder. Last November 12, his girlfriend, Jennifer Harmon, was 7 months pregnant. Gary and Jennifer got into an argument. They struggled and Jenny fell down a flight of stairs. After an examination at St. Bernard's Hospital, it was determined that the fetus was no longer viable. You work for Jenny's civil attorney, who wants to file a separate lawsuit for the emotional trauma caused by the assault and loss of the fetus. Your complaint will claim emotional distress, but your research and brief will deal with the limited issue of whether the murder charge in relation to the fetus is valid. Client 14. Penny Katz is suing Home State University. Her son, Jason, was a freshman at the school last fall. On September 13 of last year, Jason went to a rush party at Muga Alpha Muga Fraternity House. Part of the evening's activities included hazing new recruits, forcing them to drink a large quantity of alcohol. After finishing his last beer, Jason stumbled outside and collapsed in the bushes. He was found there the next morning and taken to the hospital. He was in a coma and never regained consciousness, dying 2 weeks later, on September 27. Your client is suing the university for negligence for allowing hazing. Client 15. Your client is Yvonne Jacobson. She is 19 years old, 2 months pregnant, and has decided to have an abortion. Before she learned that she was pregnant, Yvonne broke up with her boyfriend, Keith Vickers. Keith has filed a lawsuit in federal court to prevent Yvonne from having an abortion. Yvonne has never lived with Keith, and the pregnancy was not planned. Yvonne is filing a complaint in the state civil court, arguing that she does not need the consent of the father to obtain an abortion. She claims that this is a state matter and that the cause of action is a violation of her constitutional right to an abortion. The complaint you will eventually create on Yvonne's behalf will seek a court injunction preventing Keith from obstructing with her constitutional right. Client 16. Your client, Clyde Wilson, worked as a file clerk at Dyson Jacobs Law Firm for 20 years. He was highly respected at the firm and always received sparkling reviews. When Charles Jacobs called Clyde into his office on Clyde's 20th anniversary last October 22, Clyde expected a raise. Instead, he heard that the firm appreciated his work over the years, but that he was being let go for someone younger, and someone younger was going to be hired. Since being fired, Clyde has sought employment elsewhere without success. It is important to argue that Clyde could still perform the duties required of his position. He will argue that clients' civil rights have been violated. Your attorney is filing suit based on the violation of those rights. Client 17. Your client, Mary Rain, is divorced from Ned Rain. During the final stages of their marriage, the Rains sought marital counseling from Dolly Sharp. During one of the sessions, Ned admitting to having been abusive to both Mary and the children. The couple was awarded joint custody of the children. Ned has continued the abuse since the divorce, and Mary now wants to sue for full custody. She wants to bring the admission by Ted made during counseling to the court's attention and considering child support and child custody. Ned's attorney argues that the testimony of both Mary Rain and Dolly Sharp are prohibited by the doctrine of doctor-patient privilege. Your trial brief will research with and research will deal with the limited question of whether the psychiatrist is prohibited from testifying because of the privilege, or whether the privilege does not prevent the spouse, Mary, from testifying. But first, a complaint claiming emotional distress and assault must be filed. Client 18. Your clients are Kathy and William Bates. They are suing the regional school district for the death of their son, Timmy. Timmy was in the 10th grade. For months, Timmy had complained to his teacher, Martha Rice, about another student, Don Gallen. Timmy complained that Don bullied him, threatening him on a regular basis. The teacher told Timmy that he must learn to stand up for himself. On November 16 of last year, Don confronted Timmy on the school grounds. Timmy tried to stand up to him. Don grabbed a lead pipe from his backpack and hit Timmy over the head. Timmy died 2 days later. School claims there was no negligence and that the teacher could not have foreseen what occurred. You argue that since the teacher had notice of the threats and took no action, the school district is liable. The complaint against the district claims negligence and failure to protect. Client 19. Your client, Wilma Maples, is a 65-year-old woman who was in the hospital to have surgery. The surgery, a knee replacement, went well. During inpatient rehabilitation, she needed assistance in many seemingly simple tasks, such as getting out of bed. This past February 11, Wilma went to take a morning shower, helped to the shower by an attendant. Wilma removed her glasses and got in the shower. When Wilma was finished, she tried to get into the wheelchair. Sadly, the attendant had forgotten to lock the wheels on the wheelchair, a common practice under such circumstances. Wilma fell to the floor hard and suffered fractured vertebrae. Your attorney is suing for negligence. The hospital claims there was no negligence on its part, but that there was negligence on Wilma's part since she might have noticed the unlocked wheels had she had her glasses on. They also claim that the pain Wilma suffers is a result of other deterioration of the spinal column, not from the fractured vertebrae, and that the fall simply triggered the pain. Your complaint will allege negligence on the part of the hospital, and your research will concentrate on whether the hospital provided adequate care. Client 20. Your client, Sue Hazley, took care of her father, James Roy, for the last 2 years of his life. This past April 3, Mr. Roy was admitted to the hospital for reactions to chemotherapy treatment. James had a rare lung disease and had been given 5 to 10 years to live. During James's 3-week stay, several things went wrong. A cardiologist, Helen Hale, failed to read his chart properly before prescribing a course of treatment. Dr. Hale's treatment plan assumed that the disease was in the final stages instead of the beginning stages, and therefore did not follow protocol and failed to aggressively treat the symptoms. In addition, James was allowed to fall 3 times during his stay, each time being left alone in precarious positions. The last fall occurred in the middle of the night while on double oxygen. James was escorted to the bathroom, then left alone. The attendant not only failed to follow hospital procedures by leaving James in the bathroom, he also forgot about him. James was found on the floor 45 minutes later, barely alive. He was placed on a respirator for a few hours and eventually regained consciousness. He was, however, severely weakened by the fall and died 2 days later. Your complaint is against the hospital, in Humana Hospital, with the claims of negligence and intentional infliction of emotional distress. Client 21. Your attorney is representing a 15-year-old minor, Klaus Kendick. Klaus was accused by the school's principal of setting fire to his school. Klaus had been treated by the school psychologist. During one of the sessions, Klaus admitted he liked to play with matches to set fires to trash cans and participate in other fire-related activities. At no time did Klaus admit to setting fire to any structure. The psychologist reported Klaus's statements to the principal after the fire, and the principal made the accusations in front of several teachers, Klaus and his parents. It has since been determined that the fire was started by an electrical short, not by any form of arson. Klaus is suing the school for defamation, libel, and slander. Client 22. You work for an attorney who has been hired by the County Corrections Department, pastor, who was jumped in the cafeteria of the county jail by a gang member named Harold Peavis and severely beaten. A week before the attack, Mr. Astor told jail director Michael Hollis that Mr. Peavis had threatened him, but the director took no action. You will need to argue that the government is not liable for damages from the assault. Note, for the complaint assignment, you will need to switch sides temporarily. Client 23. Your client, Mimi Hoskill, purchased a house 6 months ago, obtaining homeowner's insurance from the Take Your Money and Run insurance company. 2 months ago, the house burned down. Mimi filed a claim that the insurance company denied coverage, claiming to have mailed out a notice via regular mail canceling the homeowner's policy 4 days before the fire. Your client says she never received the notice of cancellation. She is suing the insurance company for failing to cover her losses. Client 24. Your client, Harold Bennett, was visiting his wife, Janice, at Southwestern Hospital. As he walked down the hall to use the restroom, Harold slipped on a puddle of clear fluid. The fluid had been spilled by a hospital attendant, Kevin Porter, who had gone to get a mop, leaving the spill unattended with no posted notice. Harold broke his hip and is suing the hospital for negligence. Client 25. Your client, Sandra Branch, is suing her former attorney, Jake Fallon, who represented her in a sex discrimination case. Sandra paid Jake a $25,000 retainer. 6 months passed and nothing was done on the case. When Sandra asked for her retainer back, Jake told her he did not have it. After much argument, he admitted that he had invested funds received from many of his clients in a business venture and that the funds would not be available for several more months. He promised she would get the funds plus interest. Sandra was not satisfied and has hired your attorney to sue Jake for attorney malpractice. Client 26. Your clients, Helen Hayes and her parents, Blake and Delia, are suing her school district. Helena is a student at Kirk Middle School. Helen boarded a school bus after school for a ride home. She sat at the back of the bus to avoid two students in the front who Helen describes as bullies, Carol and Sonia. The bus driver, Patricia Hearns, for no apparent reason, ordered Helena to move to the front. Helena refused, stating that she was scared of the bullies. Patricia, the bus driver, then told Carol and Sonia to go get her and teach her a lesson. The girls immediately attacked Helena at the back of the bus, a beating that was caught on tape. You are suing the school district on behalf of Helena and her parents. Client 27. Your clients, Sue and Frank Evans, are suing a neighbor, Melinda Forrester, who accused Frank of sexually assaulting her 15-year-old daughter, Amy. Frank absolutely denies the allegation. Melinda filed a complaint with the authorities, but because Amy's statements were inconsistent and a medical evaluation was inconclusive, no charges were filed against Frank. Melinda decided to take matters into her own hands, telling neighbors Frank was a child molester. She also posted public notices on poles in the neighborhood. You are suing Melinda on behalf of Sue and Frank for defamation, libel, and slander. Client 28. Your client, Penelope Stork, was involved in a serious car accident. The impact, the result of a head-on collision with Jamie Frickman, left Penelope stuck between the steering column and the driver's seat. A witness to the aftermath of the collision, Bob Corley, stated that there was virtually no space in front or in back of Penelope, and that the steering wheel had actually been dented by her impact with it. Upon assisting the paramedics with Penelope's removal from the vehicle, Bob stated that Penelope could not walk and complained a great deal of pain below her waist. On the way to the hospital, the ambulance in which Penelope was being transported was struck by a vehicle that had run a red light. Both the ambulance driver and the paramedic state this second collision was hard but caused no injuries. Penelope was thrown from the gurney, landing almost upside down. When Penelope was finally treated at the hospital, it was determined that she had extensive internal injuries and two broken legs. She eventually recovered and is suing Jamie Frickman for the initial accident. Jamie, however, claims that Penelope's injuries were primarily sustained in the second accident. You are suing for damages for Jamie's negligence. Client 29. Your client is Mortimer Gorky. Mortimer's wife, Agnes, passed away 5 years ago. Mortimer had Agnes's coffin placed in a standalone crypt designed specifically for Mortimer and Agnes. 4 years later, Wilbur Gorky, the couple's only child, was killed in a car accident. Mortimer decided to have Wilbur placed next to Agnes in the crypt. When the crypt was opened in preparation for the funeral, Mortimer was horrified to see that the coffin had apparently been opened and sloppily resealed. Mortimer demanded that the coffin be opened in his presence. Again, to his horror, Mortimer discovered that most of his wife's remains had been removed. It has since been discovered that Agnes's remains deteriorated in an unusual fashion, which you may expand upon, but will not be discussed here. They were removed due to complaints from visitors in the vicinity of the crypt that were buried in another part of the cemetery. Mortimer is suing the cemetery, Graves R Us, for emotional distress. Client 30. Your client, Corey Battle, claims that he was sexually abused by his priest and is suing an archdiocese in another state. That archdiocese had placed the priest in Corey's parish, St. Augustine, after similar accusations had come to light in the out-of-state parish. There was apparently a long-standing agreement between the out-of-state archdiocese and the local church to help in such matters. The archdiocese claims that the court in your county has no jurisdiction. Your complaint will allege liability on the part of the archdiocese, but your memorandum and brief will relate to whether the court has jurisdiction in such a case. You will need to fabricate the name and location of the archdiocese you are suing. Client 31. Your client, Herman Selzberg, is being sued for slander resulting from a dispute regarding a yogurt company, Yogurt of a Different Culture, in which he and Jenny Abbott were co-owners. The dispute began about a year ago when Herman reviewed the company receipts and discovered discrepancies. About 6 months ago, he sent a letter to Jenny's attorney claiming that Jenny was committing fraud. Jenny has now filed suit, claiming that the letter Herman sent amounted to defamation. The question, is your client protected from a lawsuit, since in the letter he was communicating about a matter involving a potential judicial proceeding? In your case, you will create a counterclaim instead of a complaint based on the fraud charge. Client 32. Your client, Foster Jones, is suing his former employer, Big Time Development Company, for gender discrimination. At the time of his termination, Jones had been an employee of the BDT for 4 years, working as their director of construction. During his employment, Jones received excellent reviews from his supervisors. 8 months ago, BTD hired a new area president, Charlene Palmer, to oversee the operations of the division. At the time of Palmer's hire, the area leadership was only 17% women, a common statistic in the construction industry, which men dominate. Within a year, Palmer systematically eliminated all men from area leadership, either through demotion, termination, or other unspecified means. Jones was one of the men eliminated. Most of the other men who Palmer eliminated had accepted severance packages that included an agreement not to sue. 4 months before his own termination, Jones' female supervisor told Jones to act more like a girl because girls are famous for their ability to form a consensus. One piece of evidence in the case would be an email Jones received telling him he needed to think more like a woman. Subsequently, Jones' supervisor became openly hostile towards him. When your client met Palmer in a private meeting, he informed her that his work environment was becoming hostile. He subsequently was fired. Client 33. Your attorney is representing Carl and Rebecca Sandstone, who are suing the Lincoln County School Board for sexual harassment. A teacher in the school district, Elena Vixen, seduced Harry, your client's son. The board had moved Elena to the school after receiving complaints about her conduct at a previous school. Those complaints included charges of flirtation and after-hours contact with students. Your research will involve whether the school board is liable for the sexual harassment by the teacher. Client 34. Your client, Sally Corbett, is suing the city in your jurisdiction. Corbett received severe injuries when a city police officer lost control of his vehicle while involved in a high-speed chase and crashed into Sally's car. Sally has learned that a standard blood analysis of Officer Relton, the driver, showed that he was impaired by prescription medication at the time of the crash. The suit states that the city and officer are liable for damages since the impairment of the officer voids any immunity. Client 35. Your client, Janet Fogarty, is suing Bilton Hotels. While drying her hair, she received a severe electrical shock, causing burns and permanent loss of feeling in her left hand. She is suing for negligence, claiming that by placing the dryer too close to the sink, Bilton Hotels created a hazardous condition. Client 36. Your client is suing the Choo Choo Railroad Company. In a small town outside of the city, the railroad track crosses the road. At that point, the land is on private property, with Choo Choo responsible for the crossing gate. The gate hadn't worked for 2 weeks when your client, Sidney Shore, got stuck between trucks with his car partly on the track. Sidney was able to get out of the car, but the automobile was destroyed. His suit faults the company for failure to properly maintain the gate. Client 37. Your clients, Cheryl and Benny Knight, are suing David Banford, MD, a urological surgeon. 2 years ago, the surgeon performed a vasectomy on Benny. 7 months later, Benny's wife, Cheryl, became pregnant. She eventually gave birth to a baby girl, Jeanette, who suffers from cerebral palsy. Benny and Cheryl are suing the surgeon for the wrongful birth of Jeanette, asking for the costs of raising the child to the age of 22. The couple is particularly concerned about recovering the costs they will incur for Jeanette's medical expenses, including long-term care. Client 38. Your client, Carlos Beal, is suing the Magnolia Flower Company. Henrietta Jansen, a delivery driver for the florist, ran a red light and crashed into Carlos, causing severe injuries and totaling the car. The flower company admits that Henrietta was performing a work-related task, but claims that running a red light did not fall under the scope of Henrietta's employment. You're suing the florist for negligent for the negligence of the driver, for defamation, libel, and slander. Client 39. Your client, Susie Branch, has long used Facebook, mostly for keeping in touch with close family and friends. She has not used it to market any business interests or as a major platform for political views. She recently became a target of Tyler Swanson, an ex-boyfriend on the social media giant. Swanson published posts on the site that claimed Susie was currently supporting herself by offering sex for money, both online and in person. Susie strongly denies any such claims. You will sue Swanson, not Facebook, for defamation. Client 40. Your client, Georgia Templer, is suing Superstore Supermarket. Georgia was shopping on a Monday afternoon about 4 months ago when she slipped on a wet spot on the floor caused by a vegetable water spraying system. The store did place a sign warning of the danger about 30 minutes before the accident, but by the time Georgia slipped, the water had spread beyond the sign. Georgia claims that from where she slipped, the warning sign could not have been seen. You are suing the store on your client's behalf for negligence.